food, and they said, we prepare, we cook, and tomorrow, Saturday, we feed you. They prepared the food Friday, but it was extremely hot. So they didn't know what to do, and they didn't have refrigerators or power. So what they did, they buried the pots with the food in the sand, hoping that it's cooler. Well, Saturday morning, there were over 600 children around the tents waiting to be fed, plus several hundred people from a few four or five villages around. And when they went to the food was all spoiled. Big red worms moving in the food. The single leftover food was a pot that had about 4 inches of rice. Nothing else. So they really panicked. And they started to argue and blame each other as we usually do. It's your fault. You said bury it in the sand. No, it's your fault. You said cook it. You know, and just back and forth. And meanwhile, they had a prayer group that would pray 24/7. And people would change in the prayer group. There were two at a time. And every 2 hours, somebody else would go, another two. So the two girls come from the prayer group and say, guys, why do you argue? Didn't God send us here? Doesn't say in the Romans that nothing happens by chance? Stop arguing. Let's pray. So they started to pray, all of them. And after they prayed, the kids outside started to, hey, we are hungry. When do you feed us? You know? So two girls went to the other tent to continue to pray, and two girls went outside to talk to them. And as they wanted to talk to them, the kids came with a plate. Okay, I want food. So they didn't know what to do and got a spoon of rice, and the next one, a spoon of rice, and the next one, a spoon of rice. Meanwhile, these guys were praying. Two in a tent, all the others, they were 11 together, all the others in a different tent. And two are outside. Spoon of rice, next one, spoon of rice. When they finished praying, it was 11:30, Saturday morning, a.m. When they got outside, all of them, several hundreds, went 3 times. They got seconds and they got thirds. And the rice was still 4 inches. It never went down. So, God never changed. God doesn't change. We do. Isn't it amazing what? There is no secret what God can do. What God can do. Except our faith is very small. So let's go into the subject today. I just wanted to tell you the story. I could not resist not to tell you this story. By the way, we talked about the listening in prayer to God. There is a lady in my previous district in Wisconsin, and she talks a lot too. She can talk your ears off. She can kill you talking, you know. But she's a good lady, good spiritual Christian, dedicated, loving the Lord. It's just when she talks, it's inflation of words. Many words are no value because she says too many. And so basically people don't listen when she talks. So she came to me after the prayer seminar and she said, Pastor, I made the decision today that my prayer life will change. And she said, I really don't know how to understand God's will for myself today, but I am willing to obey it. And I said, listen, when you are willing to obey, God will make sure that you hear it. You remember Samuel, when God called him and he ran to the high priest? God didn't get upset. Hey, I called you, not the high priest. God called him again and again and again until he got it. God would find ways to talk to you and he will make it clear if you are willing to obey. If you are ready to do whatever he says. So she says, how do I listen? And I told her, listening means knowing somebody's voice. I was in the army. I would call my wife and my father-in-law would not let her talk to me because I was not a physician. I was in construction university and he wanted a son-in-law that was a doctor. So he said, no, you cannot be friends with him. You get one that is a doctor. So when he would answer, I knew his voice. When my wife, my girlfriend, answered, I knew her voice. So I would hang up or talk. It depends who answered. You follow me? This is what is relationship. You know the voice. you can distinguish between many voices. And that takes time, takes relationship. Not in a spare of a moment, in a crisis you pray and know God's will and the miracle happens. It takes persistence. It took Moses 40 years in the wilderness. It takes time to spend with God. And the more you pray, the more you learn. You don't learn swimming by talking about swimming. You learn swimming by swimming. You follow me? The same with prayer. So, going back. The lady said, Pastor, how can you really be quiet in prayer? I said, I know that's hard for you. But anyway, I said, try to discipline yourself that you don't just amen and leave. But you slow down. And you have a conversation with the best friend. That's real friendship. So she said, I will try. And she said, in the beginning, how do I listen? I said, well, God talks through his word. In the beginning, that's the way you listen. You study the word. You pray and study and pray. Not just prayer, not just study. You mingle them. You follow me? So she did. After a week, she comes to me and she says, Pastor, the Lord spoke to me. I said, yeah, okay. She said, listen. I said, okay. And she said, the Lord, I asked him, what do you want me to do? And he impressed me to start a community center. I said, okay, God bless you. Go ahead and do it. I said, no. You told me to pray. Now you got to help me. I said, no, God impressed you, not me. Go ahead and do it. So she told the board. Nobody listened. She came back to me. You got to help me. I said, oh, why in the world I told her about prayer? I said, okay, Thursday morning, 8 o'clock, I give you 1 hour. Somehow she got it every Thursday morning. She thought for the rest of my life, Thursday's morning, for 1 hour. I said, just one Thursday. Thursday morning, 8 o'clock, we met in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. And as we met there, we started to search for a building for the community service. As we searched from place to place, we could not find anything. The rooms were either too expensive or too small or too broken, but none of them at our price and the size we wanted. So she says, okay, I see you next Thursday. I said, no. And she said, yes. Okay, next Thursday. Believe me, 6 months every Thursday. And I told her, are you sure God told you? I said, oh, I question that every day. And I go to prayer and I humble myself. And he tells me again, keep searching. Never doubt God's leading. So after 6 months, we are in Elkhorn. I said, we visited all buildings in this town. Leave me alone, kind of, in a kind way, but really tired. And she said, didn't you say that we should be persistent when God is giving us an order? Yes, I did. I said, I would better be careful what I say. Well, while we were talking, arguing to keep going or not, I got a phone call. Oh, good. I remember to turn my phone off or to move it away. I got a phone call. It was the local Kmart. And the manager says, are you Pastor Goya? I said, yes. We know that you are searching for several months looking for a building to have a community center to help the poor. I don't know if you found the building or not, but we closed Kmart. And we have a bunch of shelves. We are willing to give you the shelves for free. I said, great, wonderful, but we don't have a building. As soon as I finished talking to him, we get to a building that was a business that they closed. They got bankrupt. And the guy says, yeah, instead of keeping it closed, I would rather get some money. So I can rent you for this money. I said, we don't have that money. How much do you have? We can pay you so much a month. He said, okay, we got a building. I called Kmart back. We need the shelves. We got the shelves. We got a building. I told my church, I've seen your closets. I know your basements. I know your garages. You have a lot of stuff that you don't use. If you have clothing and furniture that you didn't use for 2 years, you better donate to somebody who is going to use it. So they did. We filled up the room, the community center. By the way, with our community center, when Katrina came, we sent for a whole month, every week, several 18-wheelers with help there. And so We filled it up and we started to sell it to people for very, very, very low price, like 50 cents a pair of pants or 50 cents a coat. Something that second-hand stores would not come to get it for free and sell it, but poor people could afford and they would still have dignity, they would buy it. Well, we started to sell. The Lutheran church came. Hey, would you accept donations? Sure, bring it on. The Presbyterian church came. Seven other churches came with donations. After that, we started a prayer meeting Wednesday nights. One of the local churches in the community said, we are struggling forever to start a prayer meeting and our people come to your prayer meeting. Would you start a prayer meeting in our church? Yes. It started to pour. We got so many donations that we had them outside in the parking in the rain and the winter was coming and we had no more room. Our building was too small already. For 3 months, every single week, our community center was on the front page of the newspaper, local newspaper. The Seventh-day Adventist Church is helping our community. Isn't that wonderful? Well, next door store was selling clothing and he was not doing well. So he closed half of the store. He kept the front half and he vacated the rear half and turned off the heat. And he said, guys, you help our community so much, I'm going to help you too. Instead of having that stuff in the rain, you can store it in the back of my building. 3 months later, the left door neighbor, not the right, came to me and says, that guy says that since he gave you half of his building, God blessed him and he makes in half more than he made in the whole building. I'm willing to give you half of my building. Maybe your God would bless me too. Well, to make a long story short, 3 years down the road, we purchased the local AutoZone, a big building because our building was too small. When you listen to God, He has things that are beyond our imagination. He works. So let's go to our subject. Let's talk about total commitment. We are going to talk, let's say, for 40, 45 minutes, and then give you about 10 minutes for questions and answers. And then take a short break, and that would be quick, I mean 2 minutes. And then go in another shorter session, like 40 minutes or less, and that's it. Is that okay? Can you do it? Yeah. You sure? Okay, nobody dies. Good. Let's talk about commitment. I have a friend. He is a doctor in organic agriculture. He finished his PhD in Switzerland. His name is Victor Monroy. And he used to be my teacher in Norway. I did there, my wife and I, we got licensed, certified for organic agriculture and healthy lifestyle. And when I finished there, this friend of mine told me his story. When we moved from Norway back to Romania, he moved to Rwanda. He told me that he was diagnosed with cancer in the last stage. Metastasis, however you call it, the fourth stage, and the doctors gave him 2 to 3 months to live. And he had a big house in Switzerland and another house in Germany, and he just purchased a house in Norway. And he had money, and he was well-to-do, and he was respected. Anyway, and he said that he went to all the possible doctors, and nobody could do anything. It was too late. And he went in prayer to God and said, Lord, if you want me to die, I die. But I feel bad that I lived all my life fighting for myself. I work for myself. I eat for myself. I dress myself for myself because I want to look good. I do whatever I do for myself. From morning to night, I work for myself. Whatever I say I do, it's just taking care of myself. He says, I didn't really focus on you to forget myself. So if you are willing to give me another chance, I'm going to live totally different. I will be entirely yours. My mind, my body, my family, my things, my house, my money, everything. Whatever you say, I do. Well, he prayed. And he prayed. He really prayed. Not 1 hour or 1 day. Not pushing God so much for life, but He told me the struggle was not if he would heal or not. The struggle was to give it up all. He told me that he would struggle. He was willing to give up so much and then so much and then so much, but really not. He would have arguments with his wife for nothing. You left the toothpaste cap, you know, the toothpaste open. She says, you didn't make your bed in the morning. And they were back and forth, and he was always right, and she was always right somehow. I think men should be, I'm kidding. But anyway, so he had a hard time to give up everything and just give up in the arguments and just give up with everything, money and job. And it took him about 2 months of struggle. And his disease got worse and worse and worse. And eventually one night he said, I'm going to let it go. Eventually I die and I lose them anyway. If you come, they burn anyway. So you know what? I give it up. And he said, whatever it takes, I don't care. You can take them all. He told his wife, you are right. Whatever you say, that's what we do. She, really? And she pushed him. Yeah, whatever. If that makes you happy, whatever. He says that after that night, after he gave it all up, he started to improve to the point that when he went to the doctor, the cancer was gone. Nothing, zero. And he was impressed to sell everything and go to Rwanda. He sold all 3 homes. He took all the money from his bank accounts. He went to Rwanda and started an orphanage. And he got kids from the street. He sent me pictures. One kid, 4 or 5 years old, buried his dead mother with his bare hands in the sand. Because they killed her because she was from a different tribe. He took this type of children, and he by now has about 4 dorms, 1 church, 1 cafeteria, 1 school, several buildings. They, at this time, have the biggest greenhouse and agricultural land that is irrigated in the country of Rwanda. And he's teaching them, giving them Bible studies, baptizing them, and so on and so forth. And he sends me emails once a week, pictures, stories, unbelievable stories. And he used all his money, and he's receiving help from all over the world. And he says, I own nothing, but I live like in heaven. God does miracles every day. We just pray and things happen. What a life. Anyway, so how do you do that? To the point that you fix your eyes on God and you are willing to do whatever it takes. How do you do that? Well, let me explain a little. God never changed. I want you to remember, for instance, Peter got a phone call that Dorca died. He didn't search for his best funeral sermon. He went there, asked everybody to get out, and he prayed until she came back to life. Is that the way we do church? Who does that? It doesn't even cross our mind to ask that. If somebody died here and you have a funeral, how many of us would have the courage to say, everybody out? Lord, I'm not going to let you go before you give them or give him or give her life back. Who would do that? Peter did. Peter was not better than you and me. Peter rejected. He rejected his Lord. He said, I don't know him. He cursed. You remember? Well, think about this. There is a man who says, I need some money. And Peter says, money? I don't have. But I have something. I have something. I have Jesus. And I can give him to you in a second. In Jesus' name, be healed. And the guy? Instantly healed. Who does that? You have anybody sick here? You say, in Jesus' name, walk. In Jesus' name, see. You follow me? That's the way we should do church. The work started with power. And the work will end with power. There is a quotation that says, I've seen the church surrounded by dark clouds. And God's people sleeping. And once in a while I would see rays of light going through the clouds. And I looked there in vision, and there were prayer groups. A different quotation. The church was praying for the Holy Spirit. Those who confessed their sins and committed 100% received God's Spirit, and they finished the work. Those who didn't confess their sins and they are not willing to let it go, they had a divided heart. They did receive a spirit, but it was not God's. It was Satan's spirit, and they thought it's God's spirit. Have mercy, huh? We live those times. Jesus is coming soon. Sooner than we think. There is no more time to play church. We got to do the real thing. God never changed. Remember Elijah. I think it was Elisha. He is called because the widow that he prayed for her to have a son, her son died. You remember? It was Elisha. And he goes there. He goes over the body and he prays once, twice, three times until life comes back. That's the way to do church. Why did God work in that time? And why doesn't he work in our time? Why God is so powerless in our time? Did ever God change? Did he lose interest in us? Doesn't he love us anymore? Doesn't he have the desire to answer our prayers? Oh, he wants to answer our prayers. More than we want him to answer our prayers. The point is not that God changed. God is ready, waiting to pour his spirit over his children. God is ready to work and to do miracles. God is ready to work again. The point is that we are not committed 100%. Let me give you an example. When God called Elisha, Elisha didn't have a pusher. He had a John Deere with all the attachments. You follow me? He didn't rent a pair of oxen to plow his ground. Poor people would pay by hour to rent. Regular people would have a pair of oxen. Rich people would have several pairs of oxen. You follow me? Elisha had 12 pairs of oxen. You remember? It says in the Bible. He was a well-to-do man. He had a whole business. He had servants. He was not a servant. He was not just a guy. He had servants. When Elijah called Elisha, he says, "Let me kiss my parents." And Elijah says, "Think about what I have done to you." What did he do? He put his coat on him. In that time, every single function had costumation. The judge would wear some coat, the mayor a different coat. When you go to a wedding, it would be a different coat that if you didn't have it, you could not get in, and so on. That coat was the coat of the prophet. All kids that would go to the prophet's school, they would have that type of coat, and they are known. These are the prophets. When he gave him he said, "God is calling you to be a prophet." When he said, "Think about what I have done," he said, "Think about your call." And he thought about it. So instead of going to say goodbye to his parents, he went back to his farm, he sold everything, put half in his retirement, and gave half to the poor. Did he? Now, what did he do? He sacrificed the oxen and burned down the farm. Mindless. Those money could have been used for work, somebody may say. You follow me? Why did he sacrifice the oxen and burn down the farm? All the John Deere and equipment. Why did he do that? No temptation to look back, like Lot's wife. No temptation to ever turn around. Why did God ask Abraham to leave his country? No way. When God calls you, you don't go 90%. You go 100% and you never look back. There is nothing to look back. So, remember about the disciples. They were fishermen. I had a neighbor. His name was Dan. And that guy was a fisherman from generation to generation. We would go fishing. I would throw the line in the water and catch nothing. He would be right by my side, throw the line in the water and chew, chew. And I said, what do you do? Let me use your bite. Okay. I would use his bite, catch nothing. He would keep catching with my bite. Let me use your tools. Didn't make a difference. Let's switch places. I would go there. He would come here. He would keep catching. I caught nothing. He would even catch the fish. And before he would see the fish, he would say, this is a bass. How do you know? By the way it moves. He was a fisherman. Well, Peter was a fisherman from generation to generation. That was his way to earn a living. When you go fishing, you don't go at noon. You go at 4 a.m. in the morning, if you know a little about fishing. So Peter says, Lord, I have been fishing the whole night. And Jesus says, go back. Throw the net in the right side. Lord, it's 12, it's noon, midday, the sun is up. Fish don't bite. Don't make fun of me. I have a GPS with a screen. I look in the water. There is no fish. I try my best. There is no fish. Believe me. And Jesus says, go back. Throw the net in the right side. Lord, my friends, my colleagues are all there. They are going to make fun of me. Don't humiliate me. It doesn't make sense. Human logic. We got to plan. We got to think. We can go tomorrow in the night early. We can start 2 a.m. We can get this type of bite. Let's plan properly. Jesus says, go now. And Peter says, no, let's talk to the church. Peter said, it doesn't make sense. But because you say so, at your word, I will do it. That's commitment. No arguments. Lord, doesn't make any sense for the human mind. But because you say so, I will do it. No arguments. You see, too many times we reason with God. When you commit your life, you don't reason, you listen. When you go to work and your boss tells you to do something, if you really want to have a job, you do it. Am I right? Why would we reason with God and argue with Him? Why do we come with excuses when we talk to God? A real Christian is a disciple that does whatever God says, no comments. Whatsoever, like a soldier. The general says, go. You don't say, why, I don't have money, not now. You say, yes, sir. And you do it. Period. You don't say, well, we don't have the money. The general sends you, the army will provide the money. You do it. When God sends you, God will provide the means. You do it. Peter did it. And you remember how much fish they caught, do you? Okay, after they caught the fish, Jesus says, leave it all and follow me. Whoa, 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 whoa. Who gave me the fish? Didn't you? Why didn't you give me the fish if you don't want me to use it? Doesn't make much sense. Let me sell it and then I follow you. When Jesus said, follow me, what did Peter say? What would you do if Jesus said to you, follow me today? What about my family? What about my job? What about... And God would say, who gave you a family? Who gave you a job, health? Who is saving you after all? Why did Jesus give him the fish? To show him, if I have the power to give you today the fish, I have the power to give you tomorrow whatever you need. When I call you, remember, I am God. I will provide for you. You better trust me and obey me. Trust and obey. Trust and obey. Trust and obey. No comments. Trust and obey. Whatever he says, do it. No comments. That's Christians. So Peter gave up all his fish and he followed Jesus. That's Christians. The problem is that we don't trust God enough. We trust more ourselves than we trust God. I want you to think about this. I'm trying to cut a little so I could get more to the end. There is a quotation that says, when God calls you to do something, He always provides the means. Wow. Well, let's move on a little. There is another quotation. Through our lack of faith, we limit God. And because of us, God cannot work. Wow. No babysitting way of doing church. So, I remember, I'll give you an example. We are in Romania. It's a long story. I'm not going to give you the beginning of the story. In a nutshell, after I finished university, they didn't let me work because of Sabbath. So I had to do something. I started a Photoshop, and it did well, believe me. I made money. But I was not happy because they call you to weddings and people are drunk. And they want a bunch of pictures, and then when they wake up, they don't want to pay for it. And I was not willing to sue them, and I was not willing to spend my money to take pictures of drunk people, you know. So I changed my job and started a different business, a clothing business, a clothing factory. Started with zero. It's a long story how we got the business going. However, we got pretty powerful. I knew the prime minister of the country. I covered west of the country with clothing. We shipped clothing to Germany and Belgium, and we were well-to-do. In Romania, average salary in that time was $60 to $100 a month. A pastor's salary was $64 a month. We made around $400,000 to $500,000 a year. It's a lot of money here. It was a lot more there, believe me. And we gave money, God knows, I don't need to talk about it, to the church, to the poor. That's not the subject. The subject is different. God called me to ministry, to $64 a month. What do? We lived in an 8-bedroom house, square house, fence in the middle of the house with fountain, 10 acres garden alone, 2 acres strawberry. We had things. People around us had zero. They didn't have a garden. They would come and work in our garden, and I told them, take a spot, work, and then come and pick up whatever you want. Feel free. And they would help themselves. We had things. When they called me to ministry, my wife and I had to put in the scale. 500,000, 64 a month. 500,000 a year, 64 a month. How do we pay the bills of this house? We got to give up the house. Oh. You follow me? Easy to say. We gave up the house and moved in a small 2-bedroom apartment. Small. And we finished our $64 because it's easy to go from down up, but from up down, not so easy. When you have a good life, to go down, really not so easy. We spent our $64 in 2 days. And then others used to spend them in a whole month, but we spent it in 2 days. And then we took dry bread, put it in the water, in the stove, and ate bread. And my wife was crying. That was when God called us to minister, and we said, we are going to give up, sell it all, or give it away. Whatever money we get, we don't put in the bank. We give it all, so we'll never think back about this business. Forget it. After I got into ministry, I wanted to go to the seminary. They called us to ministry. They sent me to school. It was okay. It was an okay school. But, you know, not accredited, not great, because you're not allowed to have seminary in Romania. So it was kind of some pastor teaching other pastors, whatever they knew. So I wanted to go to a real school. So we prayed. And we said, okay, we go to Cologne. I put an ad in the newspaper that I sell my car. We had several cars and sold them one by one until we sold all of them except one. It was a Nissan Datsun. I don't know if you know Datsun. Anyway, made in 85. So I put the car for sale, planning to have money for the trip to Cologne. Nobody called. I went to the market. There was an auction where you would sell cars. And the car was going really nice, smooth. I went to the auction. Somebody came. Hey, I like the car. Would you start it? The car would not start. The guy shook his head and left. After he left, the car, vroom. Next one comes. Would you start it? Nothing. He left. Vroom. I hated the car. I went off the car and started to kick the wheel. And my wife, honey, calm down. If somebody knows you, they know that you are a pastor, they are going to think that you lost your mind. Calm down. God may not want you to sell the car. How do we go to school if we don't sell the car? Sometimes we don't have the patience to wait upon the Lord. We ask Him, and then we go. Like Abraham, give me a child. I'm going to make the child. And we make a mess. It's like King Saul. He was not willing to wait 7 days for the Lord. And we make a mess. So my wife said, wait, wait. Maybe it's not the best time to sell the car. The application from Cologne never came. We sent to Maria and Hue in Germany, never came. Bogenhofen in Austria, never came. Newbold, England, never came. It's like nobody wanted me. I was so disappointed, I said, Adventist schools, I hate them. I was upset. I didn't think about all things work together. Many times when we go to troubles, we ask God for help and blame others around. And we don't think that if God didn't want it happening, it would not happen. If God allowed it, there must be a reason. Instead of solve it, I would rather say, why do you allow it? Help me learn the lesson. Help me get it. You follow me? You follow me? Okay. So, basically, I said, okay, you don't want me to go to school? Okay, I gave up. I don't go to school. Didn't try to sell the car. 6 months passed by. That's the way God works. You ask something, even if he wants to give it to you, he gives it to you in the right time. You give it up. When you are willing to give it up, you forget about it. Then he works. You follow me? Okay. 6 months down the road, somebody knocks in the door. From Timișoara. That's 121 kilometers away, around probably 80 miles away. And the guy says, hey, do you still have the Nissan? I said, yeah. I want to buy it. How do you know about my car? Well, my wife was starting the fire with some newspaper, old newspaper, and she saw it and she liked it. 6 months old newspaper and you came here? You don't even know if I have the car or not anymore. By chance I do, but I don't sell it. Go away. Okay, he left. I didn't take his name. I didn't take his telephone number, his email, nothing. He lived in a city that was 2 million people. How in the world do you find him when you don't know even his name or address or telephone or nothing? At noon, I pick up my mail. Now, rewind. In the evening, I get a phone call from America. And he says, hey, Pavel, how are you doing? I'm fine. Who am I talking with? Oh, I'm Lauren. I don't know any Lauren, sorry. Hey, hold on, don't close. You don't remember me, no? We used to sing in the choir together in university. Ah, Lauren! I didn't see the guy for 12 years. I said, where are you? In America. What are you doing there? In Romania, they used to teach us that in America, it's crazy. Those capitalist people, they shoot each other on the streets, they take drugs. Don't go there. It's dangerous. And he says, this week, every night I go to sleep when I pray, God puts in my mind, call Paul, ask him to come to the seminary here. I said, how do you know that I want to go to the seminary? He says, I don't know. God impresses me every night I go to sleep. We didn't see each other for 12 years. And I said, hey, I'm not coming there. People shoot each other on the streets. I really don't want to lose my kids and my life. He says, that's in movies, Western movies, man, it's not real. I said, okay. I said, it's impossible to get a visa in Romania. You don't get a visa for America unless it's a miracle. He said, that's none of your business. That's God's business, visa. You go and ask for it. And he said, I sent you an application from Southern. I went there, talked to them, you got approved. They sent you an application. Well, next day, it came in the mail. I opened the letter from Southern Adventist University. Now, this is strange. That year, for the new year, the pastor gave us some bookmarks. And on my bookmark, there was a Bible verse that was my life's verse since I was a kid. Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you. When the application came from Southern, at the end of the application, there was a Bible promise. Guess which one? Jeremiah 29:11. I said, oops, God is talking. So I told my wife, honey, we may have to move. And she says, not willing. We gave up our house, got into in an apartment. Now you want me to give up the apartment? And we have friends, and we don't know English. We go in a country that we are unable to talk and start all over again. And we are poor. If we had our money, different story. But right now, we have nothing. Well, not easy to do it, believe me. it was a struggle. We thought about what happened the day before when we got the man at the door trying to buy the car. And we said, Lord, if you are really speaking, and that man came to buy our Nissan specifically because we need money for the trip to America, send him back. We finished praying. 10 minutes later, somebody knocks in the door. He came back. He says, my wife wants me to buy the car. And listen, I'm going to give you 500 above what you asked. He didn't even wait for me to say yes. I'm going to give you 500 above. Just give me the car. I said, okay. We sold the car. We borrowed the car from the head elder, got in his car, drove the whole night, got to Bucharest. When we got to Bucharest, it was 3 a.m. In front of the American embassy, there were 956 people ahead of me. And until morning, 7 a.m., behind me, the line went around the block, around the block, around the block. Can you picture it? In that day, 5 got visa. My family, 4, and another 1. I was 957 in line. That should tell you. When you enter the American embassy, just to enter the gate, you pay $120, regardless if you get visa or not, everybody. So you give over a month, almost 2 months salary, just to enter, so they would say no, to discourage people from even trying. So we drove the whole night, we stayed in line, and my wife prayed all the time that we will not get visa. I got inside, and I was watching people, and there were 3 windows, and the American consuls would be there. And the next guy, he would come, please let me go and visit my children. No, next. Please, please, next. If they would not leave, the consul would call the police, you know. Next one, no. I said, easy. I got there, what do you want to do? I want to go to America. Why? School. Don't you have schools in Romania? Yes. No, next one. Thank you. He said, what? I said, thank you, I appreciate it. I don't want to go. He said, are you nuts? You paid $120 just to get in? People beg me to go. You come in, you ask me to go. When I say no, you say, thank you so much, I appreciate it. I really didn't want to go. Why did you come after all? Why did you pay? I said, well, long story. We prayed for a school, and God said go, but we don't want to go. So we just came to do our duty, and unless God does a strong miracle, we determined to do whatever in our power not to go. So I'm happy you said no, because now God cannot blame me. I'm okay. Bye. He looks to me. He shakes his head. He says, come back. So tell me again, you want to go to school? Yes. You go there for money. I said, nah, not really. I had money and I gave them up. You go there to have a good life. Nah, I had a good life. I gave it up. But why do you go there? I said, listen, I told you once. If you didn't hear, I can tell you twice. You don't hear. Leave me alone. Bye. Come back. So why do you go? I said, are you deaf? Leave me alone. I don't want to go. Then why are you here? So I said, just to do my duty, you know, kind of calm my conscience. And he says, what if I give you visa alone, no family involved? I said, nah, I'm not going to live without my family. Would you stay without your children? What God put together, nobody should separate. Nah, either everybody or nobody. No, I don't give you visa for the whole family. I want to make sure that you come back. I said, nah, I don't need it. Sorry, keep it for yourself. He says, how can you prove that you come back? I cannot. Do you have a house? Well, yeah, we have an apartment. Well, I said, that's not a reason, because I can sell it and not come back. He says, can you promise? No. What if God says stay there? I cannot promise. Then I have no proof. I cannot give you visa. I said, thank you. That's what I am talking about. I left. He said, come back. I don't know why I'm going to give you visa. I said, no. Whole family. Okay, whole family. I said, what? Come on, what if I don't come back? We got visa. I got outside and my wife says, you didn't get it, did you? I said, yes, we did. She said, what? Well, now listen carefully. All the relatives, all the church members, all the neighbors came. You go to America. The country where honey and milk. is flowing on the streets. Dogs have breads in their tail, you know. It's raining with sausages from heaven. That's what they think, you know. And they say, can I have the refrigerator? Take it. Can I have the dryer? Take it. Can I have the TV? Take it. By the time the evening came, our apartment was just walls, not even carpet. They took bedroom furniture, clothing. They took our clothing, everything. We had nothing. We came just the way we were dressed, and I had $140 in my pocket left over after paying the plane tickets for the whole family. And we came here, and my friend said, do not worry. I own a big business. I am a contractor. I'll pay your school, your tuition, your food, your... God brought you here. I'll take care of you. He paid 1 month tuition. He paid food for a couple of days, 3 days, filled our refrigerator. He got in the car, drove to Baltimore, and he had a heart attack. And he died. He was dead for 7 minutes. They brought him back with electric shocks. He lost his memory. He didn't know his wife. He didn't know his name. He lost his house. He lost his boat. He lost his business. He lost his truck. He had 400 people working for him. All of them moved. He would not recognize me. Who are you? And I would tell him, Lauren, I am Paul, your friend. Oh, Paul. Okay. What are you doing here? I came to school. You invited me. Uh-huh. But who are you? I would start all over again. He was gone. So here we are in a new country. We don't know any English except hi and bye. We don't have any money. We don't have clothing. The winter was coming. We don't have food. We don't have insurance. We don't have a work permit. We don't know what to do. The school sent me a letter. If you don't pay the apartment, you are out. You don't pay the tuition, you are out. I got a letter from the power company. You cannot believe what we had been through. It's hard to even imagine. So I was praying the whole night through the morning. I started to pray at 10 p.m. 5 a.m. I was still praying. Lord, did I ever ask you to come to America? What are you doing to me? I have children. I'm not alone. Youngest one was in first grade. Oldest one was in fourth grade. I got to feed them. When you follow God, it seems it's not easy. Listen carefully to this statement. God's plans, when they go towards fulfillment, they go always in the wrong direction. You follow me? For instance, God told Joseph, I'm going to put you over your brothers. And God put him in prison. You follow me? Because God cannot use us before we surrender fully. And in order to use us, he has to break us first. As long as we are somebody... I had construction university, law school, organic agriculture school, connections, money. I was somebody. I had friends in the government. Mayor was my friend. Chief of police was my friend. Now here, I was nobody. I didn't have money. I didn't have English. Nobody. I would try to talk to people, and they would not understand the thing, and they would talk louder. If they talk louder, I understand more English. Doesn't make sense. It is so frustrating, believe me. So, God has to break us in order to be able to use us. As long as we do something he cannot do, and whatever we do is a mess. God works way bigger than we think. Our plans are miserable. He wants to do more than we imagine. We ask him small things, and we offend him. He's a big God. He doesn't play around. So he had to break us in order to use us. So God allowed us to go through all that pain. And I was praying the whole night to the point that I said, Lord, here I am. If you want to take our life, take it. If you want us to get out, we get out in the street. If you want us to die, we die. Here I am. If you want us to live, we live. If you want us to stay, we stay. I really don't care anymore. What happens today or tomorrow, we are done anyway. Do whatever you want with us. And finally, when I was willing to surrender, the Lord answered. You follow me? So I was walking to the school. And by the way, like it was not enough, I got a bad allergy. My whole body was full of rashes, big and itchful and hot. And I went to the doctors, and they gave me prednisone to the point to kill me with prednisone. And they told me, nothing we can do. It's stress. Anyway. And then I got a big bill. So I was walking to the school. My classmates had a car. They would drive a nice whatever. I was walking to the school and praying. And I stopped in the garden of prayer. If you know Southern Adventist University, there is a big trunk there right before you enter the religion department. And there is benches and background music. You know, it is well with my soul. It was that very song. It was, it is well, you know. And I was listening to the song, and I got tears in my eyes. And by that trunk, I started to pray. And I said, Lord, today I surrender everything. Life, family, I don't care. Take it. While I was praying, Dr. Blanco came and hit me on my back, and that man, old, he has power. Do you know Dr. Blanco? He hit me on my back. Young man, why are you crying? And I was so proud, I said, I'm not crying. He said, yes, you are. By now, there were 3 months since I was there. I learned English day and night. I would learn for my school classes with my dictionary by. So I would read one word, go to the dictionary, read next word, go to the dictionary. It would take me like 4 hours to read one page. And I would learn on my knees, praying every 2-3 minutes, Lord, help me understand this Japanese. And people in South swallow the words. The way they talk, they don't even speak articulate, you know? It was very hard. Yes. So I was praying while learning. That's the way to learn. I was praying while walking. I was praying all the time, praying all the time. It was like I could not stop a second praying because I was done. You follow me? Sometimes God has to bring us there in order to use us because we are so well. We don't need him. One of my classmates in Andrews asked me, why God does miracles for you and not for me? I said, listen, you are sponsored by the conference. Your tuition is paid. Your books are paid. Your housing is paid. You get a stipend of $1,000 a month. You want to change it with me? And God didn't work for you? He said, no, I don't want to change it. Okay, you have your answer. You follow me? It's not easy, believe me. It's easy to talk about it. Not easy to go through it. So, back to the story. Dr. Blanco hit me in the back. And he said, yes, you are crying. And you are too proud to acknowledge. By now, 3 months later, I knew some words. I could use them, mingle them around, the same words again and again, and say something. So I told him, I said, well, God brought us here, and we don't know how to pay our bills. And he said, well, if God brought you here, God will provide. Yeah, thank you. Okay. And he left. That Sabbath, we went to church, College Dale Church. Dr. Ed Wright, who is the Georgia Cumberland president right now, he was the pastor. Scripture reading, yes. Jeremiah 29:11. And then he talked about Moses. God called Moses, and Moses said, Lord, I don't know the language. And God said, who made the tongue? And Moses said, I have nothing. I am poor. How can I help? And God said, what do you have? Oh, this stick. Go. If I send you, I will provide. You follow me? Commitment is not about how educated you are, how old you are, how much you know, how much you have. Commitment is about surrendering, about trust, about relationship. You follow me? And it's not that we don't know. It's that we are not there. We are not willing to do it. We still hold to what we think we have. And we don't understand that we don't have anything. It can go tomorrow. You follow me? And Jesus comes tomorrow, and we still don't realize. You follow me? So, he started a sermon talking about Moses. And as he was preaching, I told my wife, this sermon is for us. We took each other's hand and we started to cry. Went home. Thursday night, somebody knocks in my door. Pastor Wright. He says, well, Dr. Blanco talked to me about you. Tell me the story. So I talked about 2 hours until I had pain in my hands because I use my hands more than my mouth. And after that, he got the message. He said, what do you want? I said, I don't want anything. Never in my life I accepted help. I always used to give. So I really don't want to take. He said, you are too proud. Okay. That's what I need, somebody to judge me. Okay. And he said, this is the deal. Dr. Blanco will pay your tuition in full. My church would pay your housing and insurance in full. You work as many jobs as it takes in the campus. Your wife the same, to cover your books, your bills, your food. And we do that for 1 year. If you don't finish school in 1 year, we don't care. We don't do it second year. In English, I took 22 credits first semester, 21 first semester, 21 second semester, 19 summer. Finished in 1 year, magna cum laude. When my grades came, I started to cry. I said, God, this is your grades. This is not my grades. I don't know English. So basically, when God sends you, he provides. They said, we are pleased you finished in 1 year straight A's. We want to do the same 1 year in Andrews, but you got to finish in 1 year. We went to Andrews. A bunch of miracle after miracle. I could tell you story after story after story after story. Finished. Andrews too. By God's grace alone. But surrendering is when you give it all up. No science. No rocket science. Very simple. When you go to the Lord and say, this is who I am. I am selfish. I live for myself, though I don't like to acknowledge. And I am asking you to take it all from me. And if I am stubborn and don't give it, do whatever it takes and take it from me. Until I am ready to serve. And then I trust you that you will provide. It's not that we all should be pastors. No. He may want you to serve wherever you work. I don't know. But he knows the plan he has for you daily. Anyway, our time is up for the first session. Let's start for a break. About prayer. If anybody has questions, this is the part that I like the most. Questions, because it's not what I think that you need. It's what you really need. And it gives me a chance to help if I know the answer. So feel free to ask questions and try to stick with the subject as much as possible with prayer. Don't go into other subjects.
You know, and you're speaking about prayer, you know, it's almost you're talking as if you have a conversation with God. And I know in my own life, often I doubt my own self whether after I'm praying and I'm listening, you know, the thoughts that you think, are they your own thoughts? Are they, you know, how do you know the difference between your thoughts, the devil putting something in your mind, or God's thoughts?
Good question. Thank you. You see, it doesn't just start from the first day. When you start praying, don't expect God talking to you right away. It took Moses several times going on the mountain. Relationship in our life, any relationship takes time, doesn't it? We want God to talk to us right away. We don't have the patience. But to build a relationship takes time. Therefore, when you start talking to God, you just open your heart and you keep studying the word and keep praying, keep studying. And the more you pray and the more you study, the more you distinguish between your brain and God's voice. You follow me? It takes time. And we don't have that type of patience. Secondly, when you pray with humbleness and honesty, even if you don't distinguish God's voice, God is a good God. He will not give up on you. If you say, God, whatever you say, I want to do it. Just don't let me go in the wrong direction. He will show it to you through different ways until you get it, as long as you are willing to do what he says. My problem is not that we don't understand his will. It's that we don't do it, or we don't want to do it, or we are not interested to know it. You follow me? The biggest problem we have is not that we don't know what he wants. It's that we don't do what we know. That's the greatest problem. Many times we want something new. Do what you have. Be faithful in small things. Remember Noah. God didn't call him to be Mark Finley. God called him to be a carpenter and build something foolish, a boat. Am I right? How many years? 6 months? A year? 120, and he was faithful. God wants you to do something simple. Do that. And the more you obey in the simple things, the more God can give you more. We want the big thing. He's not going to give it to us before we are faithful in small things. So how you get to know God's will? Pray, study, be faithful. And that's enough exercise to grow you to the point that you are ready. And it may take a year, or it may take 40, or it may take 120. But He's working on you. You follow me? I wish I had a better abracadabra answer. This is it. Simple. It takes consistency. It's not... Listen. How it would be if I would say to my wife, really, I have to spend time with you? How long do you want every day? Is that love? I would use as much as I can. If I can be with her 24/7, that's what I want. That's prayer. It's not so much, how long should I pray? How long should I study? You stay with Him until you get to know Him. And after you pray again and again and again, you will distinguish His voice. No question. Try it. And then we talk again. You follow me? The problem is not that we don't know His will. The problem is that we don't pray. That's the answer. Next question. Here, there is a hand right here. Wait a second. It will be next.
Now, we all know that when we pray, God will usually answer yes or no. And when He says yes...
Or not now. Yes, no, not now.
And when He says yes, He may answer right away or He might say wait. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is, how do you know that He has said no or whether He's saying yes but wait?
We have a problem there too. Because we too often want God to do our part. God gave you your job to do. You follow me? So basically, if God has something specific, He will let you know. And if He doesn't, He will not judge you for something that He didn't make clear to you. But too many times, should I get in the car or walk? If you have to get in the car, get in the car. You follow me? He will be with you. If you make sure that you pray daily, that you put Him number one in your life, do what you think that God called you to do until He would show you to do different. And He will open the doors for you, close the doors for you. He would, by providence, by His mercy, He's going to make it clear to you as you go. Many times, you follow me? It's very simple. My sister used to say, I don't know, should I marry or not? I said, you better pray differently. Who should I marry? Now, sure, some people don't marry, and that's okay. But she would tell me all the time, I don't like this guy, I like that guy. I said, you really want to get married? Yes. And I said, okay. You prayed about it? Yes, I did. You asked God about it? God showed her a guy through different experiences and miracles. And my sister says, I don't like him. Maybe I don't have to marry. You follow me? Many times we wonder if it's God's will because sometimes we are not willing to follow, or sometimes because God is not going to tell me, go left, go right, go left, go right. He just lets me do my job day by day. And when the time comes for something specific, He's going to show it to me. There are two problems there. First, I don't have enough relationship with Him and I just need help. I just go for help. Hear me here. I don't go for relationship. I just go for help. That's what our prayers are mostly about. That's the first problem. And second problem, when I go for help, I am not willing to do my job. I want Him to do my job. So basically, I don't know if I make it clear enough, but do what you know that is right, what God already has shown to you. And if He has some different plan, if you are willing to obey, He will show it to you. We have a problem. We go into extremes. Left and right. We got to be in balance. Does it make sense? Okay, next one. There was somebody here. Right here in the front.
I just wanted you to tell the story of the glass and then also the story of the boy that you hit in the car.
Well, we'll get there. Thank you. We'll get there. Sometimes people ask me how not to repeat the same words in prayer. When Jesus says, do not repeat the same words, in Greek, the word is babble, not to babble. And that means confusion. Don't repeat like the Tower of Babel, you know. Don't babble the same words. Let me explain a little here, because you may need to understand that. When you pray for self, it is okay to present your needs to the Lord, but it's not okay to try to persuade the Lord. You present your need and you accept His will and you trust His love and His wisdom. But when you pray for others, somebody asked me and told me a little about her son. When you pray for others, you should never stop praying. There, you should push the Lord. You follow me? Because that would give God opportunity every day to work. Intercessory prayer is different from prayer for self. There was a lady in my previous district that her son left the family, left the church, and he would not want to hear about God or about mom or dad. And the lady prayed all her life. And she asked me, how many times should I pray for him? How long? I said, as long as you need, daily, 10 times a day, 100 times a day. Well, I've been praying for 40 years. I said, keep praying. She died and he didn't turn around. He came to her funeral. At my sermon there during the funeral, he came to me and said, God touched my heart today. I want to see my mom. Would you give me Bible studies? Would you baptize me? I did. He's the head elder in the New Planted Church in Monroe, Wisconsin. When she wakes up at the resurrection day, she's going to have a nice surprise. God answered her prayer post-mortem. She's going to say, you stinker in the kingdom? And he says, what about you? What are you doing in the kingdom? You know? Because they used to argue quite a lot. When you pray for self, you need to make a choice that you trust the Lord. Not to push him. Help my daughter take the exam. Maybe God has a different plan for your daughter. Rather say, Lord, I put in your hands my daughter's school. May your will be done. I trust you. We pray so many times because it's a matter of trust. We don't trust him. But when you pray for others for salvation, never stop praying. It would give God opportunity to work for them. Does it make sense? Okay. What we said, we do. We take a break. 2 minutes break.